Well, thank you. I have to apologize for the delay because I think it's because of us that the whole thing got started a little late. I will be talking about model robustness in equity to credit. And by this, I mean that equity to credit is a complex problem in itself in pricing of derivatives, because there is the equity, meaning equity volatility, which is involved, and the credit part. Which means, and I will be anticipating a little bit about what I will say later, which means that you will be facing volatility smiles as soon as you look at the equity to credit, because the default component will have a tendency to increase the premia on the out-of-the-money options. So it means that the problem of pricing is no longer one-to-one, because you want to price, say, a convertible bond, and you don't have any longer one volatility number to relate to. You have to face the whole implied volatility surface. So that's why there is the problem of the choice of the model that we'll have to run. And I will try to show you with simple examples that I will be running on spreadsheets rather than on PowerPoint slides, that depending on the choice of the model, there might result major differences in the prices of equity to credit derivatives. Now, to say a few words about where I come from, I mean, where the whole talk comes from. I am in a software company which is involved today in the pricing, in actually developing a software for pricing of equity derivatives and equity to credit derivatives. I have to stress that we are only involved in single name equity derivatives, so we do not do default correlation and these kinds of things. Because our philosophy is based on the idea that to price a derivative is first of all to produce a hedging strategy of it. I don't know how people hedge CDOs, but so unfortunately, if you do that, the only we think workable thing that you can do is with single names, because it's only in single names, as I will show you also, that you can reliably or relatively reliably calibrate the model to the market information. So I will be partly using the spreadsheets that will run some of the software that we have developed. I think it will make it a livelier presentation. Do not hesitate, of course, to interrupt, to ask any questions relative to the theory. I will try to show you exactly what kinds of problems in practice somebody, a trader of convertible bonds, say, will be facing. Equity to credit, like I said earlier, means really, I will show you one PowerPoint slide, by the way, this one. Equity to credit means that the equity or the underlying stock of the issuer is assumed by the most common models to be diffusing in the no default state with some diffusion coefficient sigma, which is like the theory of Black-Scholes or the Black-Scholes model tells us. And then in the reduced form models, where the assumption is that the issuer may go into default, of course, provided that we all agree what we mean by default event, so provided this is well defined, people in the reduced form models tend to superimpose another process, which is a Poisson process, which is characterized by an intensity, which I symbolize by the letter P here. And triggered this Poisson process, when it kicks in, it will trigger default. This means in the most commonly used models on the street that the share, the underlying share, will go to zero for simplicity. Of course, it goes to very low values, but people assume that it goes to zero, which, by the way, means that this whole model is not a Black-Scholes model, of course. It's a jump diffusion with a single jump to zero, which is triggered with an intensity measured by the intensity of this Poisson process. This Poisson process, the intensity is also called hazard rate, by the way, I mean, just to give you some terminology. And when default kicks in, not only does the share go to zero, but also whatever derivative is written on that underlying goes to recovery value. So if you are holding a CDS, the CDS will then go to the payment value of it, which is 1 minus recovery, say. The convertible bond that you are holding will go to also its recovery value. And we happen also in the company to be specialists in of convertible bonds, which, like was mentioned in the earlier previous talk, are among the most complex equity to credit instruments. This, by the way, is the spreadsheet where you have to, for instance, key in all the features of the convertible bond, so it might get complex. So this is to say that it doesn't stop here, really, the modeling. Once you agree that default happens, you have also to be clear about what is the recovery value of the instrument, is it a recovery of what, a recovery of nominal, etc. So there are lots of things that need to be taken care of. And this also is a question of robustness, because if two people do not agree on what the recovery assumptions they have, chances are they will be pricing or end-hedging the instruments differently, etc. So the assumption is that when default takes place in the reduced form kind of models, like I said, the share goes to zero, or at least the common assumption, and the derivative instruments go to recovery value, and all this is supposed to be defined before we start doing the pricing. So I will try to illustrate my case by collecting or simulating some market data under this kind of model. Later, I will talk about a kind of generalization of this model, which is homogeneous as opposed to this one. This one is inhomogeneous. Why? Because, and this is the most widely used model, by the way, by practitioners. It's homogeneous because, as we only have two states, we have a no-default state where the share diffuses, and another state where default happens. You don't have many degrees of freedom in the calibration of this kind of problem. So if, for instance, you wanted to calibrate this kind of process to a term structure of CDSs, term structure of spreads of CDSs, you will have to assume that the hazard rate is a function of time, for instance. Or if you wanted to calibrate it to a term structure of volatility of options, or even a full volatility surface of options, you will have to assume in this model that the coefficient sigma is itself a function of time or stock. So we'll have to break the homogeneity of the model and turn it into an inhomogeneous model. And this is very common. This is what people commonly do. Not mentioning that some of them also make the hazard rate a function of S. And this is relevant to convertible bonds, because only if you make the hazard rates function of X, of S, the stock, or in other words, the spread, the function of stock, only then will you observe what used to be common on the convertible bond 2 years ago, the collapse of the bond floor, and these kind of things. So the quants who are trying to model these have no room in this kind of model but to make the coefficient of the model or of the PDE that we'll be solving function of the state variable. And because the state variables are only time and stock, this turns all the coefficients into functions of stock and time. This is why I'm calling it inhomogeneous. And you will see that this is one reason of lack of robustness, because those among you who are familiar with the local volatility models for equity know that it might be highly unstable depending on what you calibrate it against, etc. So that means that for different choices of parameterization here, you might get different solutions for other stuff like the converts. So I will be talking, and tomorrow Philippe, also, who is a co-founder of my company, will talk about the second part of this problem, which is trying now to test the robustness of hedging, or rather compare it between these two models. Of course, our recommendation, and here I'll be anticipating a little bit too, is to always choose homogeneous models for robustness. And I will show you this if I have time later. Now, so let us for now work in this kind of model, which, like I said, is the most widely used, and even in, I will only select simple cases of what, like hazard rates are only a function of time, or sigma, I will make it only a function of, a very simple function of stock, for instance. So let us go to my spreadsheet here. So never mind this, and this is the details here. Here, there is some convertible bond here, which is being defined on the right side. All you have to keep in mind is that it matures. Is everyone able to see the fonts? Right. So it matures in 2012. Say it has a nominal of 100. I'm assuming zero recovery rate for simplicity, but we can change that number. It pays an annual coupon of 2%, and it has some issuer calls features, whatever, here, and most importantly, it is convertible into one share here under conversion schedule. From start to finish, it is convertible against one share of the underlying, so it's basically a bond plus a warrant, if you like. And when I hit go here, I will price my bond. So here I'm outputting the theoretical value of the bond, the delta, which the partial derivative respect to stock, and the other Greeks that I'm sure you're familiar with. The assumptions here, like I said, in the inhomogeneous kind of model, is you have to specify what the sigma is here, what we call the Brownian volatility. And we insist on Brownian volatility and not just say volatility. People would say volatility because here I'm really insisting on the fact that it's the Brownian component of the model, because there's volatility which is also due to the jump to zero. So this, by this we mean just the sigma, which is the diffusion of the share in the no default state. And the other parameters that go into the pricing obviously are yield curves, which are here in the not very interesting for our purpose today, and the hazard rate. So this is the sheet which is dedicated to, like I said, modeling the fact whether the hazard rate is a function of time only, function of stock only, etc. So this is where we model the P of the hazard rate. And we price like that. Also, we have some tools attached to it to help us calibrate the model. And by this, I mean the following. I mean that in practice, no one observes either the volatility here, which is the Brownian volatility, or the hazard rates, because these are mathematical variables. Forget about inferring Brownian volatility from historical data, because everyone knows in derivatives business that the past never repeats itself. So we really have to always be forward-looking. And because these things are unobservable, the only way is to infer them from objective, I don't know what objective means, data. And this has to be, in our case at least, the prices of other traded stuff. So our philosophy here is we are not dealing with structural models. I'm not going to go and calibrate the model to some unobservable parameters ruling the capital structure of the firm or whatever. I'm going to do all the calibration given what I said earlier, meaning my model is diffusion, jump to zero with certain intensity, and some sets of recovery values attached to all the instruments in the universe. So this is my model. I will only calibrate it from traded data. So typically here, if I'm dealing with the pricing of a convertible bond, and this is used to be a very popular strategy with hedge funds, convertible bonds, I say used because now it's a little bit falling out of fashion because they're no longer making as much money as they used to be on converts, whatever. So this is, I'm talking about something really very successful or used to be successful. So if I'm dealing with pricing of a convertible bond, the only observables, if I'm looking to price the convertible, is going to be something else, hopefully simpler than the convertible bond. So typically, the arbitrageur of convertible bonds will try to look at the prices of equity options written on the same underlying, or credit default swaps, or par bonds, whatever, or pure credit instrument written on the same issuer. So typically, for instance, we will look at one option. Let's assume that I'm looking at the option which expires in 1 year and struck at 120. I'm assuming here that the stock today is 100. So I'm looking at the one out of the money call, say. And let's assume that it's a call, it's a European call. And let's assume that the implied Black-Scholes volatility for that call that I'm observing on Bloomberg or whatever on the market is 35. So this is not Brownian volatility. This is the implied volatility, which is the same thing as giving the premium of the call. So you might have this, just this information. Why not? And you might wonder how to price the convertible bond. So somebody, like a few years ago, when nobody knew about the hazard rates and all this, so when the people had models where the hazard rates were assumed to be zero here, so this is purely Black-Scholes, so I would go there to calibration, and say that I want to calibrate just the volatility of my model, just using option one, so I calibrated with option one. Option one is that option again, here, option one. And I'm assuming that the parameterization of my volatility, Brownian volatility, is flat. So on the simplest case. Of course, this is a trivial case, you will see. When I hit calibration here, the answer will be, of course, 35, because this is Black-Scholes, and the price of the convertible bond will be 113.26. So this is like what people used to do, like, let's say, 3 or 4 years ago. Now, people know that there is default, now know that there's hazard rates, etc., so they want to calibrate not just to an option, but also to CDSs. So really now, in practice, typically all our customers, for instance, have observed in the market a certain term structures of CDS spreads. So here I've inputted the spreads of the CDS for 1 year, 2 years, etc. And now the problem will be one of calibrating the hazard rate and volatility from I'm no longer able to see my so hopefully the with option one is clicked here. So and the CDS. I'm having problem with my Excel sheet because of the resolution. My problem is I want this to disappear, and this happens, I know, when I have projectors going on. So let me try to fix that. Just a second. I will close and reopen the sheets and you'll see. Okay. Okay, here we go. So with CDS and option one, and let me now try to maybe enhance this. It's better this way. Okay. Is it clear to everyone? No, sorry about that. So what I'm doing, I'm trying to calibrate against now the option, which is trading at implied vol of 35, and the hazard rate, the spread term structure of CDSs, and I've clicked hazard rate and volatility against this. When you do calibrate here, it is now generating for me the hazard rate function, which is consistent. This is a result of computation. And it has computed for me the new Brownian volatility, which, of course, is no longer 35, because this is... I've added another component to volatility here, which is the jump to zero, which I've calibrated from the hazard rates.
So now your hazard rate is just a function of time?
Yes, yeah, because I assume the term structure of CDSs. All I'm saying now is very simple. I'm saying as soon as you start talking about CDSs, so we are in jump diffusion, so I have to calibrate both CDSs and the option, and so you see now the Brownian volatility is no longer the 35, even though the option here, if you look at it, it is still priced at 35. And if you go, by the way, I can compute for you the whole implied volatility surface here. So if I hit on implied vol, you'll see that my 120 call, this I'm talking here about the 1 year maturity, right? So you can see that the 120 call that I'm calibrating against is in fact trading at 35. So this means that I've calibrated right. But you can observe at once that Because I have assumed now that the model is a jump diffusion and I have calibrated the hazard rates from the CDSs, now it means that the options are no longer black holes. You can observe there's a massive skew now going on the options, just because of the fact that this model is a jump diffusion. Yes? No, just function of time. Just, yeah, for now I'm just keeping it very simple. All I'm saying is that this, what I'm saying is really simple. I'm saying that 5 years ago people used to trade convert just by trading volatility. They said, fine, the option is trading at 35 vol, I plug a 35 number in my convertible bond pricer and I got the price. And this was the price that I showed you earlier, which was 113 something, if you remember. To do it again, what I did earlier is assume that the hazard rates were zero, because this is the model from 4 years ago, so black holes. I assumed only calibration of volatility, because nobody knew what hazard rate meant. And I calibrated it with option one, like that. And this is very simple. Of course, the result was 35, because this is a black holes. If you computed the smile, you would see that in that case, let me show you in that case, the prices of put options. You can see that all out of the money puts are worth zero here because it's a 35 diffusion and the stock is trading at 100. And the implied vols are 35, of course, because this is black holes. So this is very pretty trivial. But see how the deep out of the money puts are worth two ticks for the 40-00 everywhere here. So this is the situation 4 years ago. And the convertible, which is our interest today, as a hedge fund involved in convertible arbitrage, is worth 113.26. Okay, so now, today, people know that the process is not diffusion, of course. There are a few people who went the wrong, along the wrong road. Some people, I know that, and even in big investment banks, are still trading the convertibles with a local volatility model, not including default. I'll talk about it a little bit. So, but people who are including default are now saying no. I mean, we not only do we have that option here, which is trading at 35, but also we are observing a term structure of CDSs, because this is available now. And now my model is the, what I call the inhomogeneous model, but I have default state also. I have a default state, and I have a hazard rate, and I have a jump diffusion. So when I go to calibration, it's not only volatility, I have hazard rate now that I can calibrate, and I can calibrate the hazard rate from the CDS, which is all the whole term structure, and the option one. And if you do this, now the Brownian component is not 35, it's 30. The hazard rates, the result of calibration of the hazard rates, is this function of time. So this is the result. Now if I look at the puts, this put is now worth 50 ticks. The 10 put, it was worth zero. Now, all of a sudden, it's worth 50 ticks, just because, and this is a one-year put, so it's not a very long put, just on account of the fact that with some probability, which is not zero any longer, which is measured by the hazard rates, I can go to zero, which means the stock goes to zero. This is the key assumption here. Because I assume that the stock goes to zero on default, it means out of the money put, it becomes a default put really, and its value is massively bigger than it used to be. Now try to amuse yourself and compute implied volatilities, black holes. This is what gives you the massive skew. Under 35 implied volatility, this put is worth zero, or if, less than a tick, let's say. Now it's worth 50 ticks, and this means this kind of implied vol implied black holes volatility. So this is the situation today. People are facing implied vol surfaces on equity, which looks like this. And now imagine the nightmare which drives some people to calibrate this kind of implied vols by local volatility alone. Here my model is very simple. I've assumed hazard rates, which only depend on time, which may be constant also, I don't care. I could have done the whole thing with just one CDS data and I would have assumed a flat hazard rate and one volatility number. and it's already given me this richness of implied vowels. Now, people who are in inequity world would have had the tendency of calibrating a local volatility surface. And my claim today, and they are doing it, is that they would have matched the options, of course, because they are doing calibration job, but they would have had a different convertible bond number. So let me show this. Already in that case, let us see how the convertible bond price is different. It's 106.83 now, instead of 113. So it's a massive difference. But here, of course, the reason is obvious, because I'm assuming default now. So now the convertible can go to default. And we have this kind of smile. Okay. Now let's look at the same problem from the point of view of somebody who is not dealing with convertibles. Convertible, like I said, it's obvious why the value has differed this much, because in the first instance I was assuming no default, so basically the bond floor of the convertible was kind of safe. Now I assume that it can go to zero, and this made explain the large differences. But forget about for convertibles for 1 second. Let's imagine somebody who is just involved in equity options, and who, like we said, had observed the 35 implied vol on that call, and is observing a 42% implied vol on that put. So let us now move to the other level when I want to calibrate to two options rather than one. So imagine that here I'm observing on the 120 call the 35 implied vol that I said, and on the 80 put of the same maturity, which is 1 year, the 42 implied vol. I'm just trying to simulate for you the case. Imagine that the world is like this. An equity option trader walks in and observes this volatility smile, and let's see what can he do. Let's imagine that this is somebody who is not aware of the default component. He will immediately have the tendency to again set... He won't do this because he doesn't even know about hazard rates, but it means that hazard rates are zero in his model, as viewed by me, I mean. And he will make volatility a function of S, say, here. So I've selected a very simple function of S, which is the power law. So here it's not very clear on the graph because it explodes very quickly. But this is the shape of volatility. So volatility, local volatility here, is worse, let's say, something here against 100, and it blows up when it goes to zero. That's a simple model. The parametric form is this one. It's something over S to the power beta. And now I will do calibration. The model will find for me the sigma, the alpha here, and the beta. So in that case, I will go to calibration. I want to calibrate volatility alone because, like I said, I don't know about hazard rates. But now I want to calibrate it with the two options. So I have, I'm ignoring completely the information here about the CDSs. And let's not remember that there is already here, I'm already committing myself to the model choice, because I've chosen this parametric form for volatility. You may wonder why. I said it's the simplest. But people have many, many different parameterization, and even some of them try non-parametric form, which it's even worse for robustness. But anyway, this is simple, just for illustration. I hit calibration now, here. And the result of calibration is that, in the volatility sheet, is that it found these parameters for me. So this is an output of computation. I can go check the smile. So I reprice my smile under this new vol sigma of S that I have computed, and no hazard rates. So this is a local volatility model. I'm going to hit implied volatility here, but before I do this, so let's not forget that my targets are calibrated against that 80 put and that 120 option. These are the two data that I calibrated against. And before I do this, observe how the volatility now on these kinds of put will massively change. Okay? It was 73 here, now it's 56. Because all I've done is calibrate a local volatility model which has no hazard rates or no default component in it. So I calibrated the diffusion with just a sigma depending on stock. Why? Because I needed this to match at least two options. I matched them, So if you believe that two options are enough to capture this queue or what have you, whatever, all I'm saying here that you are completely victim of model robustness, because I haven't even tried to price the convertible yet, but because even these options, which are your concern as an equity option trader, you are completely mispricing, depending on whether we are using a jump to zero in your model or not. You can see the puts here are almost zero. They are not zero because I'm using the funny assumption of volatility blowing up to infinity when I go to zero, because this is my sigma of S. This is why this put is not worth zero, but it's not worth 50 ticks. 50 ticks I had only in case because of the default component, which is massive. And if I price the convertible from this, the price is again 114.97, which is massively different from the 106. Okay. So how much time do I have left?
15 minutes.
Yes? No. In the last case, I assumed an old school model where there is no default. And I'm only... Sure. Yeah, of course I can do this. Yeah. I will do it next. All I'm saying is that the world is now complex because you have this. My whole point is to argue in the end that you cannot get away with adding the CDS and the calibration. But some people, I mean, for convertible bond traders, it's obvious that you should include the CDS because they are using them to hedge. But somebody, the whole point today, and this is what is even more important to my eyes, the whole point is even equity option traders who have inherited the whole way of trading from what equity option used to be 5 years ago have no idea that they might even be sitting at very remote location from the CDS desk in the bank. So they have no idea what the CDS is trading, on what prices. And their only legacy models or whatever they have is something with local volatility. They may do stochastic volatility, etc. There are endless variations. But all I'm saying today is that if you are dealing with names where you have default, even in trade, this is very simple I'm saying, even if you are trading just equity options, you cannot not use the CDS. And it doesn't stop here, because I will tell you then that if you use the CDS, then you'll have to use it also in hedging the option, which is some complexity which maybe 5% of people doing volatility arbitrage today have really integrated in their minds, not mentioning the system. Yes?
What volatility are you using? Is this a sigma?
Yeah, the sigma of S equals sigma zero over S to the power of something. No, diffuse. So maybe it's not CV. I'm using just PDE without, I don't know what to call it, because I do only numerical thing. I'm using a PDE where sigma, the coefficient sigma, is function of S with two parameters. It's not a jump diffusion, that's what I'm saying. Of course, I mean, that you can calibrate everything with it, even barrier options, I agree, but then...
You can calibrate CDS.
How?
How? It's best absorption at zero, it's a default volatility model.
No, but I mean the CDS is not an equity, is not written on the stock, so how does it depend on...
Because the stock is a finite probability to hit zero in CDS.
Oh, okay, from really the boundary condition. Yeah, okay. Okay, so it's a theoretical point you're making. Then I agree. But this is very different from what I had earlier. Earlier I had a jump to zero. So there is a finite barrier, which was not zero, which was given by the Poisson process, which was triggering default. Because I could have talked about equity default swaps. In that case, the things would be very, very different, because equity default swaps are one touches, So if you calibrate equity default swaps with a jump diffusion with a hazard rate or a CV model, I'm sure the results will be even more at variance. Okay, no, I'm not saying that I cannot calibrate the CV model with some stuff. All I'm saying is that people who are doing equity options do not even have CDSs yet. So. And this is what they will. So I'm illustrating a very simple point here. I showed you that the convertible bond price is different in that case. Now, just to illustrate the fact that, of course, we could have we could add everything now that we have the tools in hand. I could have said here in calibration, use option one, option two, calibrate hazard rate and volatility. So here I will be using the sigma of S function, but I will be adding myself a jump to zero with a certain hazard rate with the CDS. Okay. So in that case, yes, I'm using, I don't remember who asked me the question, yes. So I will be calibrating to both options and to the CDS. So meaning here it answered me with a certain hazard rate function. It's no longer zero. I can go check the smile again. So let's not forget that I'm trying to hit the 42 here and the 35 here. And again here, because I'm including CDS, we'll observe that volatilities here will blow up again. Because of my hazard rate function. Because of the jump to zero. And the convertible will be, again, worse, a lot less. And so on and so on. I could have calibrated the hazard rate from an out-of-the-money put and an out-of-the-money call and then priced the CDS, etc. The whole point, I guess, to keep it simple, is that because now default is a major component of the problem, and I happen to have CDS quotes available or EDS quotes, whatever, I should be using them to price anything really in the universe, even equity options as such. And let me show you how this simple thing is going to change completely the trading habits of even a volatility arbitrage in options, arbitrageur in options. Why is that? If you look at, let's start from the last calibration thing I did here. If you observe a smile like this, and you observe that the at-the-monies are roughly trading between 37 and 41 volatilities, but you have massive premium on the out-of-the-money put. So the question I'm going to ask here is somebody who's trading equity option, who is long that 40 puts. So let's go here and trade the 40 put. So this is a put. With that price here. So the price of the put is 202. And you can check it just to make sure here. If I compute all the prices, here it is. It's that put here. So that's his premium. So the question that obviously now comes to mind is that now I'm an option trader. I'm facing a market which has this massive skews. I'm buying that put for whatever reason. I'm long that put. I'm paying up a high premium because I'm buying it at, I can't remember the volatility, at 73.19 implied vol relative to 40 implied vol at the money. How can I possibly do the volatility arbitrage of that put? That's the question. People who do volatility arbitrage, at least this is how I still see it, will think that they can earn the time decay that they will be facing every day by just doing the delta gamma trade. So that trader will have a tendency to buy a few deltas here, and as the underlying stock goes down to 70 here, we will have to buy more and more of those underlying shares, and if it approaches the put, so the put becomes at the money, I will have to buy more and more. If it goes back again, I will sell them, so I will make money by the usual rebalancing of the delta. This is what they do. And the whole point of the diffusion framework is to show you that if you are pricing the stuff right, trading the underlying loan will, in the end, make up, will earn for you the premium of the option. But obviously this is not to be true here, because the diffusion that I have, what I'm going to make money just by the sigma of S, the diffusion is not nothing. I mean, if you look at what the volatilities I have here, sorry, it's the volatilities are roughly around 30%. 30% here. So there is no way, by just trading the diffusion component, that I'm going to make up for the extra premium that I have paid. This is why, if you are pricing it realistically in a jump diffusion framework, where really now we understand that the extra premium is due to default, not to sigma, you have to include CDS in the hedging strategy. So if I go back to, let's say, 80 and the underlying here, and now my whole point is going to be that as soon as you enter a jump diffusion, because it's no longer a one-factor model, you can no longer hedge your option or your derivative with just the underlying. You have to include, dynamically speaking, another instrument which is sensitive to the other factor, which is default. So the CDS is the best candidate. Now, what CDS? You have to define a CDS. So if I define some CDS here, let's assume a CDS which matures also next year, because I'm talking about one-year option, and which has a certain recovery value, and has a spread of 380. Because that CDS, remember, is the CDS that I'm pricing here at 380. So that's the one, the one-year maturity CDS. So let's assume that I want to take this. Yes, thank you. I want to take this as hedge. If I go to the option here and click on adding the equity to credit hedge ratio, and I want to use the CDS, the model is telling me here that I have to sell 52 of that CDS, which has a nominal of 1 euro here, against my option, and by the usual delta, of course. And as the stock moves, like it moves every day in the equity volatility trading world, if it moves to 50, all the numbers will move. You have to buy more stock, like you know you should, and you have to buy back a few CDS, because now you are only equivalently long 42. So really what I'm saying here is that equity to credit, you are no longer in black shoals. You will have to include, at least as the simplest model, the one where we assume that the stock goes to zero or to some low recovery value, triggered with a certain process which is different from independent of the stock. So a Poisson process, typically like this one. Maybe the intensity of that process is a function of stock. That's a different issue. But you have to have a second factor. And this, I think, is the realistic explanation of smiles, of equity smiles that steep. Now, of course, people who are in converts already know that, because they know already that the CDS, they use it to hedge the convert. But I'm saying that even somebody trading any option has no other choice now but to also use the CDS as a hedge of the other component of the process. And only if you do this and follow the ratios dynamically, like I'm showing you, will you break even always. Either default happens or not, you will break even in that case. Because if you sell that CDS and default doesn't take place, the time value that you earn on the coupon of the CDS that you short will exactly compensate the extra premium you've paid up on that put. And if default happens, what you make on the put by the gamma effect will exactly compensate the loss on the CDS. This is how the ratios were computed, by the way. And this is saying we are expanding the dynamic the hedging strategy to a jump diffusion framework. Now, today I only talked about, like I said, this model. Earlier I said this is not very robust, because I just showed you one, the simplest case of parameterization of sigma, which is sigma of s, which is a power law. I haven't even started telling you how we can make P a function of s. It's not robust, and tomorrow Philippe will exactly explore a homogeneous model that will be robust in calibration and in hedging, where it will be key to use the CDSs in the calibration, because otherwise the model will not give you a well-defined set of parameters. So in that kind of models, you might end up, when you calibrate, with different local minima if you don't use the CDSs. Using the CDS will help you find the right set of parameters. We also know that if you used the equity default swaps, it may even improve the model further, because equity default swaps are barrier options, really. So they really will help calibrate the smile dynamics on top of the default. In other words, and this is back to my topic, which was co-calibration, you should be using these kinds of models for robustness. And because the model is richer than what you are used to, you will have to use other stuff than vanilla options. Stuff like CDSs or barrier options or equity default swaps, etc., to robustly calibrate and uniquely calibrate, ideally. And Philippe will show you how we do this and how this will translate into hedging as well.